Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate. Which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, January 17th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we are going to finalize the 50 best movie moments of 2024. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editors Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
And writers Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Nina Starner.
Oh, hi.
And Jeremy Mathai.
Hey, folks. Happy to be here.
All right. So I know we have a lot of ground to cover today, and we're going to have a lot of fun. But before we get started, I just wanted to say that we're recording this a day early, and we just found out about the death of David Lynch, who is one of the most iconoclastic American filmmakers of all time, and a guy who provided a ton of unforgettable moments across film and TV over his long career. So if some of our energy is lagging a little today, that's probably why. This is just a massive loss for the film community and a pretty sad day. So I just wanted to say RIP real quick to David Lynch, a truly unique voice in the world of cinema. So figured, you know, we had to start the show that way. Jacob, all right, let's kick things off. This is the third episode in our trilogy. I'm handing the reins to you. Tell us where we stand right now.
Right now, we stand with 29 moments locked in, so we got to lock in 21 more today. We can do it. Once again, if this is a 2024 movie, there's spoilers for it in this episode, so please tread cautiously. We need to get down to brass tacks in a pretty serious way, looking at our moments. I'm going to temporarily put on my dictator hat, and we're going to run down some movies that clearly will be on the list. We just haven't gotten to them yet, just so we can make sure they're done right now before we get to the nitty-gritty. So I'm going to work my way down the list. The Brutalist will be on this list. I think we all can agree with that. So the question is, which Brutalist moment are we going to include? The two on our list are, funnily enough, the opening scene, the Statue of Liberty being revealed as Adrian Brody's Laszlo Toth arrives in America, and the final scene, the architecture award presentation in 1980 in Italy with that final cut to the credits. Both these moments are vital. The opening sequence with the reveal of the Statue of Liberty with that booming soundtrack that suggests both triumph and despair sets the stage so perfectly for what's going to come over 3.5 hours. But my money would be on the ending sequence where it flashes forward 20 years and in a matter of minutes, the entire film we just watched is completely recontextualized. And we realize that all of the seemingly absurd and insane passion Laszlo has put into this community center project is his recreation of his Holocaust experience and tribute to his dead wife. that smash cuts the credits with that Italian disco synth song playing, and you're left with your feelings in such an abrupt way. You don't even have time to process them. You sit there slack-jawed wondering, what did I just see, and how did this movie just change in a matter of 2 minutes from one thing to another? I really feel like it needs to be the final smash cut to the credits for Brutalist.
I'm actually a little torn on this, not going to lie. I love the opening. It's hard to top a visual as just instantly recognizable as the Statue of Liberty, completely inverted, and especially for a movie like this, which is all about, I mean, the very literal construction of you know, the symbols, institutions, what America represents to different people, especially immigrants. I thought it was just a perfect way to open the movie and set the tone for what was to come for the next, you know, 3.5 hours, intermission included. But I mean, I can't argue either. That ending really, it just hits you right in the gut in the best possible way. And it left me feeling all sorts of complicated emotions that, like you said, I couldn't even process at the time with, that needle drop at the, during the ending credits. So I don't know. I could go either way on this. I won't fight you on that. If we end up going with the epilogue. But yeah, I love this movie. This is easily like one of my top five movies of the year.
I think that if the end goes on the list, I think that the other scene should at least be in the discussion for now, just because I'm not sure I'm ready to lose that one either, because I don't think I've ever seen like immigration to the United States presented in such like a claustrophobic and disorienting way, on top of the symbolism that comes from like when you finally see the Statue of Liberty and the combination of like relief and triumph, but also like the inverted image of it being upside down and everything and representing what's to come in the story as the movie unfolds. And so like I think that it's the imagery and just the way it's shot and like depicted, you know, is something that makes it equally as powerful in a completely different way.
My case for the ending would be, in addition to all the stuff Jacob said, the thing that really stuck out to me about the end of the movie is that the whole film seems to be about the push and pull between the money people and the creative people, right? Like the Guy Pearce character just like desperately wanting this sort of ineffable quality, this artistic quality that Adrian Brody's character has. And when you get to this epilogue, it's all about the art, and the artist is the only thing that matters. And there is no talk whatsoever of the guy who financed it and the guy who was meddling in it and the guy who was, you know, just trying to like stand there off to the side and point and say, here's what I think this should be. And I think it's just this triumph of the artist kind of storyline coming through at the very end and saying like, in the end, this is the thing that's really going to matter, not the suits, you know, trying to dictate things from afar. So I would agree that the end deserves to be on the list.
It's no accident that Guy Pearce's character literally vanishes. He wanders into the building and is never seen again, which is not an accident. All right. Is anybody here opposed to this moment making the list? And we can move Statue of Liberty in discussion for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a good compromise for now.
Yeah.
All right. Brutalist deserves to be on this list, hands down. Okay, movie that will be on this list is Long Legs. The question is, which Long Legs moment? We have the ending, all caps, Daddy, Mommy, and the first time you notice one of the Shadow Demons. I put that last one, I'll cut it, because I noticed the Shadow Demons early on and counted like 7 or 8 throughout the movie and had a great time spotting them, but it's different for everybody else, so I think we should keep it to one of the other two. So, Long Legs fans, what do we think? Ending or Daddy, Mommy?
Before we actually make the choice, I just want to do Daddy, Mommy.
Damn, RIP anyone using headphones.
Sorry.
I think it's got to be that one personally, because it's got to be, because it's not just one of the best movie moments of Long Legs. It's one of the best movie moments of the year. Like, even people who haven't seen Long Legs know about that scene.
Just because people know about it, like, there is a viral nature to something like that, like with the Nicolas Cage. I think that ending is what brings that whole thing home. And you talk about, like, shock value and something that sticks with you and really sticking the landing of something that is just, like, ugly and makes you feel like you need to go home and shower. You know, it just like, and you do get that nice Nicolas Cage punctuation at the very, very end. I do feel like that's kind of the best encapsulation of what Long Legs is. I understand like the like what that daddy mommy moment represents, but I think the ending is the better representation of that movie to me.
Jacob, are you sure that one of these Long Legs moments has to go on the list? Because I would say neither of them belongs there, really.
This was one of the movies of the year.
All right, fair enough.
Ben came to shit on this party today.
Nina, I know you're not a horror person. Did you see Long Legs? I need your opinion on this.
I did not see Long Legs. I really like sleeping at night. Look, I'll trust all of you. I have not seen this movie. It's probably one that I could watch like with all the lights on and a pillow to tuck over my eyes during scarier moments, but I'm curious about it. I hear Nicolas Cage is so good, but unfortunately I can't really weigh in on these moments. Which one is scarier? Pick that one.
Jeremy, how do you feel about these moments?
I love this movie. I love both moments. I think Nicolas Cage, I mean, my argument for the daddy mommy moment is that it is just such a great addition to Nicolas Cage's career right there. I mean, Ryan's not wrong about the ending though. It is the thing that kind of like brings everything to just a peak, honestly. And but I don't know.
Exactly. And like the way that I look at it personally, speaking for myself, is that I think about our favorite like horror characters, right? Like the like these this canon of characters that we keep coming back to, our favorite monsters, our favorite slashers, our favorite whatever. And we remember the like the things that they do more than like the amazing moments. Like, don't get me wrong, like the opening of Screen is one of the meanest, nastiest, most incredible moments. But like the thing that people remember more than anything are like the things that were done or the things that were said. Like, it's do you like scary movies? Like, that's the thing people think about. So when I think about Long Legs, I think daddy, mommy, like these big freak out sort of moments, the same way I think about Freddy Krueger saying, welcome to primetime, bitch, in Nightmare 3. Like, that's how my brain is processing this. Like, but don't get me wrong, the ending rips. Like, it's a great ending. But I think if we get one, I think about what is going to be the thing people are going to still be talking about years from now. And I think it's Nicolas Cage doing that.
I think if we were ranking lines of the year, like that might be at the top, but we're talking scenes.
Well, one would say that a line is a moment in a movie.
No, I know. I'm just trying to sort of parse this out because
hey,
I also
can't
just
believe we're gonna need a bigger boat is not a good scene. It's just a line. Like, no, it's a
that's
scene.
Not, no, that's not just what I'm saying. I love both of these, and it's not my list, or they'd both go on over some of this other stuff, but I'm saying if only one is gonna get on, I think the ending, I don't know. I've made my case. I'm just trying to, I mean, it seems like I'm getting a little outvoted here and I don't want to hold us up too
honestly
long.
Honestly, I'm cool with either. I just really love that moment. Like,
yeah, does anyone like fully supporting the ending, or am I the only one kind of holding us up here?
No, I'm fully supporting the ending.
It's daddy mommy. Okay. It has to be daddy mommy.
But I also like, and I know it might slow things down a little bit too, but like we're going to get through a bunch of other stuff in, that we haven't talked about yet, but maybe moving the ending into in discussion for now is the best option.
Let's lock in daddy mommy and see if the ending can make the double dip.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Doing some dock maneuvering, filling up the empty radio time while I do it. Okay, I had to make a choice. I had to see either Brutalist or Nickel Boys. I chose Brutalist before this podcast. So Nickel Boys is clearly going to make this list. I cannot join in this conversation. I can only listen to what people say. Who wants to take the lead on Nickel Boys in the two moments we have listed here?
I think the entire ending sequence, there's two moments we have listed. One is the entire ending sequence, and then the other one is the first switch in POVs during the lunch scene. And we've talked about Nickel Boys on the podcast before. We don't need to go too deep into it. But yeah. I don't know. Like, I know Brad and I love this movie. I'm not sure how much other support it has on
here.
I
also love this movie.
Okay.
Same here. I loved it. It's
good,
great.
Good.
Okay. All right. And that's what I like to hear. So I'm guessing one of these will make it. My vote is for the entire ending, which is just another gut punch of the revelation of like who you've actually been following in this sort of fast forward timeline, that the jump ahead timeline, and what that means. And the first switch in POVs during the lunch scene is interesting, like formally, but I think if we're going for the sort of standout moments. It's like the swirling montage and like emotional catharsis and gut punch at the same time that comes in the final, I don't know, 2 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, because even though the POV switch is like an interesting way for the narrative to evolve and like changes, you know, how the story is told from there on out, I wouldn't say that it's like a moment that I'm like, oh wow, you know, kind of thing. But that ending, man, yeah, that's a gut punch for sure.
Yeah, as the person who put that second scene on our list, I'll just defend myself and just say I put that there partly just to make sure Nicol Boyce was represented here and was definitely going to get at least one moment to make the final cut. But I will say, in defense of that scene, I did love just the formalism of it that I wasn't expecting whatsoever. I knew this is going to be a point of view, first person story going in, but I had no idea up until that moment that it would be sort of switching between the two main characters like that. But I would agree with you guys. I'm not going to fight you on this one. I do think that scene that we all mentioned is the standout. So I'm happy with that.
All right. So yeah. Nicol Boyce ending makes the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we good cutting the other one, or do you want, or is it going to go into discussion?
No, we can cut it.
We'll cut it.
Okay. Next movie that I think absolutely will make this list in some capacity is Wicked. We've narrowed down to Defying Gravity or Popular. I don't see how it's not Defying Gravity. I like Popular just fine. Ariana Grande is very fun in that song. But Defying Gravity,
I see how it's popular.
Defying Gravity is the Wicked song, and Cynthia Erivo is arguably doing the best version of it ever recorded. So I don't see how it's not Defying Gravity. Fight me.
My argument is that Elphaba has less to do in the first part of the movie, except for Defying Gravity, and she's going to do way more in part two. That's going to be really impressive. So I would push for this to be Ariana's defining moment from the first movie, because this is Glinda's biggest number in the entire Enterprise.
Mm.
I would say Defying Gravity, while an incredible song, is actually the part of the movie that looks the worst. That's where it sort of turns
totally
into, like,
agree. Yes.
CGI sludge and like flying around, and like it just kind of lost me visually, but the song is so good that it kind of overpowered my distaste for what I was seeing on screen and kept me like emotionally hooked. So I guess
Whereas
you could say
think,
like Yeah,
yeah, I think Popular uses like practical effects really, really well. It has like all of the set pieces in the room. It has Ariana Grande, who is a professional dancer, performer, doing incredible physical comedy. I would push for Popular if we can only have one. I also agree that the CGI is super sludgy. And while I appreciate that Cynthia Erivo apparently sang a lot of the song while on a harness, I wouldn't know, because in a lot of it, she's just a blob flying around on the screen and I can't tell if she's singing or not. So it's clearly like just a CGI Elphaba.
But at least she's flying free.
I've not seen Wicked. I will only say this. Defying Gravity is a absolutely towering song in pop culture. And the only thing that I would say is I appreciate Nina's attempted argument there, but we are discussing movies of 2024. So like sort of trying to fast forward and say, oh yeah, but you know, she's going to have more to do in the next movie. Like that doesn't hold a lot of water for the conversation we're having right now. So if Defying
Gravity,
it also
doesn't diminish the impact of Popular to say that it's
no,
a huge
but I just
want to
sort
movie.
Of swap back at that argument a little bit. That feels a little like
can
sort
I make
of
a
like
proposition?
Trying...
Here's a proposition. Let's make Wicked the first movie to have two spots. Let's lock in both. Screw it.
I'm all about it.
I don't know, man.
Let's hold space for both.
I think.
EJ, let me hold your finger really fast.
Hold my finger.
I think
maybe
Defying
one
Gravity...
goes into discussion.
Yes, Defying Gravity goes into the list, and I think Popular goes into the discussion.
Okay, all right. In the spirit of moving this along, I think I'll agree with that.
Well, I don't think this is solved. I don't want people to feel begrudged here, because it sounds like Ben and Nina both feel very strongly about Popular. I feel very strongly about... Let's do this. Everybody put an asterisk next to the one you would lock in. Thrilling radio as we fiddle around on a Google Doc.
I'll cut this part out.
No, keep it.
Don't you dare, Ben.
Okay, based on pure numbers, Defying Gravity is the clear winner here.
Yeah,
so let's move Defying Gravity. Locked in. Popular in discussion. It could still make it. But we will... Well,
to you at home, I just added so many asterisks to Popular.
All right. So looking at this now, I want to head up some titles that have multiple options. We can just kind of trim through this a little bit. Let's first bounce up to Blink Twice. We have two scenes, Turning the Tables and The Ending. I like Blink Twice a lot. I have a feeling these were added by BJ. Am I right?
They were. If they don't make it, that's okay. I just think that Blink Twice is probably the most like criminally underseen movie of 2024. And the way that Zoe Kravitz subverts films of this ilk, which I'm not going to say what it is because it is a spoiler, and I know a lot of people didn't see it, I think is just incredible. And I love both of these scenes so very much. But if they don't make it, that's cool.
Yeah, I like Blink Twice movie. A lot, but I'm not so sure we can squeeze these in there.
Yeah, very, very good movie.
So should we say goodbye to them, BJ?
Yeah, goodbye. I love them.
Yeah, right, I think at this point, if someone says the words, like, I could live with it not being on the list, we got to just, you know, because we're getting down to it.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
If you're a facilities manager at a university, you know students rely on the cafeteria for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and the occasional late-night snack. So when a dishwasher breaks down and dirty plates pile up, the mess hall can turn messy in the blink of an eye. Enter Grainger. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast delivery, the product you need now is never far away. So you can turn that dishwasher back into a lean, clean washing machine. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, three moments from a big hot mess, Megalopolis, a movie I do not like, but like talking about. It's Madame Web, Francis Ford Coppola's filmography. We have three moments. The bow and arrow erection scene, where it looks like John Voight has a giant erection, but he actually has a bow and arrow under his covers, which he used to kill Aubrey Plaza. It's a hell of a thing. Adam Driver answers a question from the audience. I don't remember that moment. Someone please fill me in a second. And most importantly, Adam Driver becomes a cyborg or something. When he's shot in the face, then his miracle technology makes him into a robot or something. I'm not sure what happens, but I know I remembered it. So, Megalopolis, folks, what do we think?
Do any of these get on? Like, does this a movie that has to be on the list? I didn't see it. I'm asking.
I think so. I think at least one moment has to make our list.
Megalopolis is the hot mess of 2024. I feel like we should at least talk about it.
Yeah, if we're talking about the wildest movie moments of the year, this movie's chock full of them. I think I would throw my weight behind the boner scene, because if only because the Adam Driver answers a question from the audience is something that, like, what, 2% of moviegoers like around the world actually got to experience in a theater. It's basically...
Yeah, it was the live component, right?
Right. He answers a question, and someone from the audience literally answers, literally talks to the screen. And I, for one, I didn't get to see that. I was out of state when that happened, when it was in theater. So that's one of my biggest bummers of 2024 that I missed that. I would say in the interest of fairness, I think the one that most people actually saw has to be the John Voight bow and arrow scene.
I will say I've seen very little from this movie. I've seen a million times on Twitter someone posting the little bit of the scene where John Voight says something to the effect of, "What do you think about this boner that I've got?" And that line reading alone, I think, if we're going to, you know, having not seen the movie, but that's pretty incredible.
I was going to say, having not seen the movie, I'm surprised that entitles me, yes, is not a moment on here, because I saw that all over social media as soon as the movie came out. But I've also seen stuff about the bow and arrow, so I'll vote for it.
I think you put the bow and arrow scene in discussion and cut the cyborg thing personally, but
I think that works. That'll keep us moving. All right, we'll cut the other two Megalops moments. We'll return to the bow and arrow erection. Two moments here from Monkey Man. The Hedras join the fight and the elevator fight. I think Monkey Man's pretty good. I think the first half is a lot better than the second half. I don't think either of these moments make the list.
Agreed.
Yeah, I wouldn't fight you on that. I love Dave Patel.
I would like to fight, but I've got other fights to have. So let's just, I really would like to fight. I liked Monkey Man a lot more than most, but.
The elevator fight's pretty cool, but it's, I want to see Dave Patel's next movie, is my opinion on Monkey Man.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I really liked Monkey Man a lot. I really did. Particularly like the last third, I just thought was, a lot of like why I go to the movies. I bought the 4K recently, dying to revisit it. I feel like a lot of people miss this one. Before we just send it off, just please watch Monkey Man. It's disclusion from this list should not discourage you from watching it, is all I would say.
All right, the last movie with more than one nomination here, Terrifier 3. Three options: the shower chainsaw kill, the floor opens up, and what I'm calling the Santa bombing. Terrifier 3 is a hell of a thing. This whole franchise is a hell of a thing. I still am kind of flabbergasted that it exists and that's been as successful as it has been. To be specific, the shower chainsaw kill is just some of the nastiest, most horrifying practical gore I've ever seen in a movie. Well done to all involved. The floor opens up is the very end of the movie, where even in a film that slowly introduced supernatural elements, it's very surprising to see a portal to hell open up in the middle of the slasher film and suck a character down. Really enjoyed it. And Santa bombing is when Art the Clown, the slasher killer, sets off an explosive at a crowded mall filled with children and kills like 16 kids. And I was sitting there agape being like, how did somebody put money in this? How did this get made? So my question is there anybody else in this podcast who's seen Terrifier 3 who thinks that this evil, gnarly, incredibly entertaining piece of trash that a lot of people have embraced wholeheartedly has a shot?
I feel like there are going to be people really upset if it's not on the list, but personally, I don't care.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but I do, even as someone who hasn't seen it, it does feel like one of those things that is very representative of a pretty wild year at the movies. And the fact that a movie like this made $90+ million worldwide, I don't know. I do feel like
we have more stuff on here that we like, though, right? Like that we actually care about.
Yeah, that's fair. But I'm just thinking, like, isn't in some way, this is getting very like, isn't in some way like our job on this podcast to like be the voice of the audience in some way, right? Like, I know we're only us, but isn't this to try to like sort of condense the year down as best we can?
Maybe. I mean, I would say it's more us. I care more about what we think than trying to read the tea leaves of what crowds will think right now.
Okay, then fuck it. Then there's other stuff that I'd rather have than Terrifier 3, so... All right.
Here's where I think, if the kill from Inviolent Nature did not happen last year, Terrifier 3 would be on this list. But frankly, that's the one way Inviolent Nature devours Terrifier's lunch, is by having the actual best kill of last year, as hard as Terrifier tries. So I'm cool cutting all three Terrifiers.
Yep. I think that's a great justification.
All right. It's gone. All right, last movie with more than one nomination, one of which is sarcastic. I don't appreciate it. The first one, this one's from me. Transformers 1, Optimus Prime pretty much says trans rights. And Transformers 1, the ending sets up the movie we really want to see. Who put that sarcastic one there?
I didn't put that. I think that's the, to me, like, the ending is, I did not much care for Transformers 1. I was my most disappointing movie of the year, but it did the thing where suddenly, like, I'm in the bag for the sequel because of what happens at the ending. So I get the sense I'm not going to get any support here, but it was by far the best part of the movie. So,
well, mine's also the ending, because throughout the entire movie, this is a film where the Autobots realize that their control of their bodies has been taken away from them by a fascist government force. And in the final moments of the movie, when the Transformers become Transformers and are allowed to control their bodies and control what they want to be, Optimus Prime talks about the right of all sentient beings to make choices with their bodies. And you realize, holy shit, is Transformers 1 a pro-trans movie?
It sure is.
So I think this moment, like, made me sit up in my seat and go, whoa, okay, all right, Transformers 1, let's do this. So I think Transformers 1, I think Optimus Prime saying trans rights should be on this list, personally.
I love it. You're not going to see me fighting it, so.
I look like a dick if I argue against this, so.
Jacob, just because there's so much stuff that's in discussion that, like, pushing this through would feel, I don't know. Like, at this point, I feel like anything that doesn't have, like, universal, full-throated support from every single person on the call probably just needs to be put in a discussion, right?
That's fair. Okay, we're going to cut the other one and put Optimus Prime saying trans rights in discussion, but I'll come back to this one. Okay, I want us to now kind of run a roughshod over the remaining list a little bit. We can kind of Thunderdome, sort of picking ones that we feel should be moved up in discussion, should be locked in, should be cut. I encourage people to cut, especially, but I'm going to go against my own better judgment and recommend one for locking in. The Heretic Monopoly monologue should be in the top.
Yes.
Shocked that we're not talking about it until episode 3.
Yeah, no, this needs to go, and I don't even think we need to talk about it that much, but it needs to go.
No, it's 100%. So good.
Yep,
Hugh Grant's best performance since Paddington 2.
All right, Heretic Monopoly monologue is in the top 50. All right, Thunderdome, guys, what are we cutting? What are we keeping?
Did anyone else see VHS Beyond? How much support do I have here?
I like it a lot, but what do you mean by opening sequence?
The Resident Evil-esque Stork, it is called. The invasion Stork of the house is
Stork's amazing, but it feels like it's like a quarter of the movie. So I'm not sure we can qualify it for like a moment here.
Okay, fair enough. Then cut it.
All right, but yes, the opening segment of VHS Beyond is rad as hell.
Okay, then, yeah, okay. Argument saved. Cut it.
I think I can go on a little bit of a bloodbath if people are down with it, because a lot of them are ones that I put on, if not. So as much as I love it and as hilarious as it is, I do think that we can cut You Know He's a Snowman, It's Christmas, from Hot Frosty. I just love Hot Frosty so much, and I can't believe that movie did it, but I think that can go. Lost. What's that?
I was agreeing with you. It's a hilarious moment and very memeable, but not our top 50.
Yeah, it can go. Another one, I think, Get Lost from Moana 2. That is the best song in that movie, but I don't think that Moana 2 is making our best 50. So that can go away as well. And then I think another one that I added, at least I hope I'm the one who added it, is the Blues Bar scene in A Quiet Place Day One. I love that movie. I think that scene is absolutely beautiful.
BJ, don't cut it yet. Don't do it.
Okay. Then put it in discussion. Oh my God.
Blues Bar scene in A Quiet Place Day One goes in discussion. I agree.
Yeah, okay. I will fight to the death for that one.
Okay. And then, I don't know. Did I put the third act from Speak No Evil, or did I hallucinate that?
Oh, no, that was me. That was me.
Okay. I do think it rules. I think that it's fantastic. I don't know if it's going to make our top 50, but I do think that, like, the ending of that movie, in my opinion, justifies that movie's existence, because it really is like what makes a good Americanized remake of an international movie is that you have to change it to the sensibilities of the country you're making it for instead of just remaking it for the sake of remaking it. So I do think they did a really good job with that movie. And I think a lot of people slept on it.
It's the branch reality of the original. Like, everyone wondered, like, how can you possibly remake that movie for, and they really did a good job of, like, it's certainly not, it doesn't go as hard as the original, but it also doesn't necessarily, like, dull the knives too much. When I put this on here, I really wanted to see where we were going to wind up at. And yeah, I guess at this point, I agree, it's probably not going to get there, but I would like to shout out the original Speak No Evil for being the one of the most bleak sort of mainstream movies I've ever seen. And then the remake for doing a very good job at actually justifying its existence because of the third act.
Yeah, I think the moment you realize the third act is pivoting in the opposite direction of the original, it should be an insult, but it actually works really well. So props to this movie, but we can cut it.
And while we're here, because there are a bunch of like random one-off moments from horror movies, do we want to just like have a horror discussion and see what goes and what doesn't from those?
Yeah. You want to start with the very bottom, Strange Darling Chapter 2?
God, it's so good. Like, this one's really hard for me because it is so unique and I think it's so interesting, and it's where this movie really like gave the whole audience kind of like an oh shit reaction.
Remind me what chapter two is, BJ. What's the reveal there?
Do I have? Am I going to spoil this movie? A lot of people didn't see.
Yeah. First of all, I added this. So BJ, if you like this as much as I do, then we can talk about putting it in discussion.
Okay, then I would say probably put that one in discussion, and then we'll really let it go balls out when we get there.
Yep. Chapter two, for those of you, we won't spoil it fully yet. It's very late in the movie because it does it to five chapters out of order, where it reveals what is actually going on. It happens very early, but it's revealed very late in the movie.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So that one, the one of all of these that I'm honestly like gonna push for is the courtroom scene in Red Rooms. It is the most haunting thing I've seen this year. Like, it is such a non-traditional scare because it's not an oddity jump scare. It's not anything like that. It is a scare where you just realize the depths of like humans' capacity for being just insanely evil and weird, and it just fucked me up real hard. I don't know if anyone else on here is like big on Red Rooms. I know Chris is, but he's not here today, so I might be fighting that
I'm
one.
Dying to see it. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Oh
so
my
I wish
god,
I could
that
speak
scene,
with,
like, God, it fucked me up, like bad, like it really bad. It's evil, evil, evil movie.
This woman is pretty incredible.
Red Rooms should be on this list.
Okay,
I was gonna say, I think it might. I don't know. Like, how many other people have seen it? Jeremy, did you see Red Rooms?
I have not. That is definitely on my list, though.
Yeah,
right, like, maybe we just move that to in discussion for now and then see where we're at.
Yeah, let's put it in discussion because there is one horror moment we haven't discussed yet that I strongly think should be on the top 50. That's okay, the first one.
Jacob, can I make a suggestion?
What? What's that?
We don't have a ton left. Maybe we go just top down and like whoever put it on there, make a quick case and we just kill or discuss, like just try to get through what we've got left.
All right, let's do that. But let's all not waste. Let's not dilly dally around here. All right, baby girl milk scene.
That was me. I love it. I think it's great. It can go. I'm not going to be heartbroken about it. But it is amazing.
Okay.
All right.
Watch
Bad
this movie.
Boys, Ride or Die, the cool gunpoint camera sequence. Who put this one on there?
I put this one on there, and it's just a really cool way of shooting a sequence where the camera is attached to the barrel of Will Smith's gun that he's shooting, and the way it maneuvers around through the action sequence just looks badass, and it's super fucking cool, and it's even cooler when you see how they did it behind the scenes, so.
I'm in support of this one. This was a kick-ass action scene to me. Like, this is way cool.
In discussion, then?
Sure.
I'd be okay with that.
The Bike Riders. Spoiler alert, Tom Hardy's death. I have not seen The Bike Riders.
Oh man, this is such a bummer of a scene because Tom Hardy is the leader of the motorcycle gang, and there's this other young gang that's coming up, and he basically challenges his power and what he thinks is going to be like a fair, essentially like knife fight. He just ends up getting shot and just dies, and like it's the beginning kind of like of the end of like that that feel of biker culture and that kind of thing. And yeah, it's just pretty brutal.
But is it going to make the top 50?
I don't know. Probably not. I don't know if anybody else would support it. If they don't, then I'm fine cutting it.
Unfortunately, this is not even the moment from that movie I would have picked. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was very, like, meh on that movie. Justice for Jodie Comer's accent, though. She nailed that.
All right, we're cutting it. Cuckoo, someone is following Hunter Schafer. I put this one on there. I like Cuckoo more than most. The scene where she's on her bike, going down that dark road, and slowly realizes somebody is on foot is chasing her is very scary. There are scarier moments in our top 50 already. We can cut it.
Agreed. That shadow play, though, is beautiful.
Yep.
Very cool.
A Different Man, The Final Dinner, a movie full of so much dark comedy. Climax is here. I love Different Man. I say that as much as I love Different Man, I had a hard time picking a moment to put on this list. This is what I settled on. A Different Man is so much a big picture thing that I can't justify this one moment making the list, because I think it's hard for me to pick one scene that summarizes this film. So we can cut it, even though A Different Man is great and you should watch it.
I agree with Jacob, and my frustration is that I had the same issue. I couldn't come up with a single moment, and I sort of agreed, like, without consulting Jacob, that this was maybe the moment if one was going to get there. But yeah, it's more of a tone piece than a singular thing. So
yes, yeah, I thought the same thing.
All right, this one should make the top 50. The First Omen, the demon hand vagina shot.
Oh my god, it's so good.
It's pretty great.
Digging my heels on the demon hand vagina shot, which, according to the director, she was on Mike Flanagan's podcast recently, and she said this was the scene in her pitch that got her the job.
Yep.
Wow.
And it's almost the scene that got them an NC-17 rating.
For those of you who have not seen it, this is a close-up of a vagina, and then a demon hand comes out of it. And you do not. And that's when you realize that The First Omen is not some watered-down prequel studio garbage. It is really good prequel studio stuff. And it's here to not take prisoners.
I've not seen it, so I can't, you know.
It's
This
it's
Omen
amazing.
Agrees.
Hey!
Thumbs up.
So, does anybody agree with me this is a top 50? Like, lock it in, or is this an in discussion?
Oh, I do.
I think just to save more fights, just lock it in, because we got a lot left to talk about.
All right, locking it in. Next up, Hundreds of Beavers, the assembly line sequence. Brad, why is this top 50?
Because it is just a perfectly, hilariously, incredibly constructed sequence of action comedy that is straight out of Looney Tunes. It's so much fun. It's just an outstanding sequence, and it's a standout sequence in a movie that is absolutely hilarious and packs such a great slapstick humor bag of tricks. And yeah, like I think to me it's just like the best sequence in the movie.
It is some Buster Keaton stuff. And while we're here talking about Hundreds of Beavers, I do also just like want to say, for the record, if you bought a Blu-ray, on the back there is a quote from a Slash Film review that is credited to me. I did not say that. That is Matt Donato. They're currently, I think, trying to remedy that. But yeah, shout out to Matt Donato who did the review for us. I did not say the amazing words that are on the back of the Blu-ray.
Collector's item.
I know. I got mine and I was like, I didn't review this. I'm keeping that forever note, though, now, because it's hilarious.
All right. I think 100 Beavers should be on top 50. We've been such a booster of this film for so long that not put it on here would make us criminals.
Agreed. Yeah, I feel pretty strongly we got to lock this in.
All right. 100 Beavers, locked in. All right. I like movies. Lauren suggests happiness to a normal couple browsing the comedy section. I have not seen I Like Movies. Whose is this?
This is mine. I'm fine if it ends up getting cut. I just put it on it because I wanted to mention this. I Like Movies is a great little indie comedy, kind of like in the vein of Clerks a little bit. It follows this awkward teenage kid who starts working at a video store. He's super enthusiastic about movies in a very sincere but also kind of annoying way, because he lacks self-awareness and like misses social cues and stuff like that. And case in point, there's just a perfectly normal couple browsing the comedy section, and their movie that they want isn't in. I forget what the movie is, but it's like some very general audience, like, oh, we want to watch this movie. And he says, actually, but may I suggest Todd Solondz's Happiness? And they're just like, oh, yeah, sure. And they just walk away like they're going to go watch a perfectly normal movie, and they are not.
That sounds very funny and like a good moment. It doesn't sound like top 50.
All good.
All right. Immaculate, The Last Shot. For those who don't remember, this is the close-up on Sydney Sweeney's face as she gives birth to the mutant genetically engineered Antichrist, realizes what it is, and crushing it with a rock while screaming, all in one long close-up of her face. It's kind of remarkable, and I love it. It would make my personal top 50. What does the crew think?
Yeah, this is tough. Like, I put it on here because it's so memorable and, like, just an incredible piece of acting and staging and blocking and everything. But, like, I just don't know if it's going to make the cut. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. If there's enough support, I'd be happy to throw it on the list. But
man, I love this scene so much. Like, so, so, so much because it's this build up and you're like, they're not going to do it, are they? And then they do it and she commits harder than, like, most people did this year. Like, truly incredible stuff. I would say in discussion at minimum.
Yeah.
All right, I'm good with that. Infested, the spider hallway scene. Who put this one on?
Did anyone else see Infested? Am I alone in this?
Yeah, this movie makes my skin crawl. I don't know if this is going to make the list for me personally, but I do think it's worth discussing.
So I'm terrified of spiders, but this guy got a Evil Dead movie on the back of this movie. This hallway scene, they have to sneak past all of these gigantic spiders that have overtaken this apartment building. And it's like a low budget movie. And what they accomplished, it is so, 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 like, even if you have a hint of arachnophobia, it is like the most terrifying thing. Like, it is so deeply impressive, genuinely scary, looks amazing. If it were up to me, this would 100% be locked into the list. Like, what you're able to do, like, with limited resources, like, this is inventive, really effective horror filmmaking on, like, shoestring. And yeah, I wish that I could get the support to get this on there. We have other arguments to have, so I can kind of drop it, but I think this is a truly remarkable bit of filmmaking.
Yeah, I think you shouting out here is really good for it. I'm glad you did, but I'm not sure it's going to be top 50 since you've been arguing.
Yeah, fair enough, but.
All right, next one up, Inside Out 2, The Anxiety Attack. I think this may be a top 51, guys.
Yes, I'm glad you said that because I was going to fight for it, and I think it needs to be top 50 as well.
Yeah, I also put this one on here. I've written a lot about how the Inside Out movies are very, very personal to me. That Anxiety Attack just, I still talk about it in therapy.
Yeah, I was going to argue for this one for the same reason, because I also mentioned it to my therapist.
Is anybody here opposed to the Anxiety Attack from Inside Out 2 making our list?
It's the biggest movie of the year. It belongs on this list.
All right, I'm locking it in. Okay, a movie that's controversial amongst our crew. I saw the TV glow, the Planetarium monologue. How do we feel about this?
I feel like Chris will kick all of our asses if it's not here.
Chris declined to be on the show, so Chris doesn't have a choice in this.
I do think, and I've made my voice known about how I truly feel about this movie, but I think this movie is so important to so many people, and this monologue changed a lot of people's lives this year, and for that alone, I do think it should be on the list.
Yeah, I think this movie surged ahead despite lots of odds to become like one of the most talked about, like, word of mouth for this movie is insane. I've heard about this movie from so many people long before I sat down to watch it. So I think it's an important movie of 2024, and this scene is very striking.
I also think it is absolutely insane that Emilia Perez is the trans movie in awards contention and not this one. I will say that much.
Oh, we didn't put any Emilia Perez moments on this list.
I will kill all of you with my bare hands.
Transformers 1 will make the list, and then we'll have a trans rep, so we're all good. I saw TV Glow. I think it should probably make the list.
Yeah, it should.
Yeah, it should.
Yeah, let's I agree. Do it.
All right, it's on there. Okay, this is one of my additions, Late Night with the Devil, the nightmare sequence. This is the found footage horror movie where David Dastmalchian is the host of a 1970s talk show. And it's a long-lost tape of his final episode where he has a possessed girl brought on to showcase an exorcism on television. And the final stretch of the episode retains the found footage aspect, but suddenly starts going into a deranged stylistic nightmare. And it ends with the question of, did we just witness a filmed version of a man's like journey into hell, or were we hypnotized, which is suggested as a possibility of people watching it were hypnotized and hallucinated it. It plays with found footage in such a cool way because it acts like we're actually watching the tape and asks us to consider what we were watching. And that's really damn cool. But this is late in the process. I'm a booster for this movie. I know that everybody is. Does anybody else like this moment, or can we cut it?
I think it needs to be cut. I personally, but I this is a movie that I liked but didn't love, and I would argue this is almost where it started losing me more than anything else. So
I really love the moment, but I don't think it's going to make it. So I think we cut it here.
Yeah, same.
Fair. All right, BJ, Love Lies Bleeding, Jackie Goes Kaiju.
I don't want to cut this moment. I love it so much. I love Rose Glass as a director so much, and I love that she now has this thematic through line where the final moments of her movies force you to question reality, but really all it is it's taking the overwhelming feelings that people have and personifying them in, you know, just otherworldly ways. And watching Katie O'Brien turn into a kaiju is like, you can't just like show me that and expect me not to fall in love.
Here's my one question. We do not have Love Lies Bleeding on our list yet. I know this movie is really important to BJ, but the fact that it's not being talked about until now as being a potential moment makes me wonder if it maybe is a little too late for a passion moment like this to get on the list. I hate to frame it that way, but
no, I get it. And like part of why I didn't bring it up until now is because part of me thought like, oh, well, I'll probably have other backers on this movie, but I don't think I'm going to for the other movies that I'm championing. But if it doesn't make it, it's fine. I am well documented of loving this movie, and it was my number one for the year. So, you know, my conscience is clean.
I will say I like this movie a lot too. Yeah. I wouldn't be opposed to putting this in discussion if we don't want to kill it just yet, because I really do think this is one of the better moments of the year. It is just it's a great movie, but this scene in particular, I just love how it went there.
Okay, it's in discussion. My old ass, The Truth About Chad. Is this you, Brad?
It is.
Is The Truth About Chad going to make a top 50?
It's not, but it's a lovely moment in the movie. It's the turning point for the character's ultimate resolution, and it's just a nice moment. So I'll leave it there, because if someone out there hasn't watched My Old Ass yet, it's not worth ruining.
Right. Yeah, don't spoil this. It's a great movie. And the reveal in particular is really, really touching and moving. But I kind of figured this isn't going to make the list either, so I'm okay with that.
Hey, the piano lesson, calling on ancestors. Who put this one on here?
I did. Piano Lesson is directed by Denzel Washington's son, Malcolm Washington, and it stars his other son, John David Washington, also stars Samuel L. Jackson and Daniel Deadwyler and Ray Fisher and Corey Hawkins. Got a great cast, and it's a surprisingly good movie. It's another one of the August Wilson movies that Washington and his family have been working on for a handful of years now, maybe almost 10 years at this point. But man, this movie, I think, is just like criminally under-discussed, and the... I guess like big climax of the film is this incredible moment centered on this piano, which is like the centerpiece of the movie. And it's all of the discussions in the movie basically center around what are we going to do with this family heirloom piano that we have that's so intricately carved by all of their ancestors. And there's a ghost story component to this as well. This is another one that I just don't really want to spoil, because I think not a lot of people even know it exists. This is another Netflix movie. So yeah, check out The Piano Lesson on Netflix, but this one's not going to make the list.
All right, speaking of Netflix movies, Rebel Ridge, the Wikipedia scene. Who put this one?
It might have been Chris, actually. I'm not sure.
All right. Rebel Ridge is real good. I'm not sure it makes the list.
I think Rebel Ridge is also one of those big picture movies where a lot of the moments are leading into this overall questioning of, you know, what have we been watching? What have we been fighting for? That sort of situation. So I think it falls under that same category of like, it doesn't really have moments because the whole movie is the moment.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Shout out Rebel Ridge. Go watch it. September 5th. Are the terrorists watching our broadcast? Who put this one on here?
I did.
Is it top 50?
It's not top 50, but it is a great moment in a very suspenseful and intense historical drama.
All right, can we cut it?
Yeah, you can cut it.
Skywalker's A Love Story, The Final Heist. Who is this one?
I put this on here. Again, another Netflix movie, real life story about these people who illegally climb up and basically scale skyscrapers in the middle of cities around the world, and like do it for social media clout, for the lack of a better term. But they plan this quote-unquote heist to basically break into one of the tallest buildings in the world. And it's just a really interestingly shot kind of real life heist movie, basically, that I thought was pretty well done in a movie that I have a lot of complicated feelings about. But Skywalker's The Love Story is on Netflix if you want to check that out.
We can cut it.
Yep.
All right. Last one we have not discussed, Snack Shack, Losing a Friend. Is this you, Brad?
It is. It's not going to make the top 50. And much like my old ass, this is a moment that I would prefer not to spoil if someone hasn't seen the movie. But it's just a wonderful moment where when you kind of like think that the story is over and reached its natural conclusion, there's something else that happens and it kind of comes out of nowhere. And it's a really emotional moment. And it made me love the movie more than I had already did by that point. And so, yeah, if you haven't seen Snack Shack, go watch it.
Yeah, definitely check out Snack Shack. For those who've been listening to the podcast, this is the same director as Dinner in America, which is one of like my babies and movies that I talk about all the time. And Snack Shack also does contain one of my favorite lines of any movie I saw this year, which is, hey, you want to go make out to Combat Shock?
All right, folks, we have 38 moments locked in, 12 slots remaining, and 24 moments in discussion. So if we cut this list in half, we have our top 50. So I'm going to go make some suggestions based on the big picture now of stuff from our in discussion that we can just chop immediately. And if you guys agree, great. The Mystery of Ungenerally Warfare, Alan Ritchson, Swedish accent, tiny glasses, rip people apart. It's fun. Is it one of these last 12 slots? I don't think it is.
No, it can go.
Yeah, I agree. I made my case for this on a previous podcast, and I'm okay with seeing this one go. It's a great moment, though. Don't get me wrong.
Wicked, Arriving in Emerald City. Now that Popular is also in contention for in discussion, I think we can cut this one.
Yeah, that one can go.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Let's go from the opposite end here. What are some moments here that absolutely have to go into his remaining slots? It sounds to me like Unfrosted, the funeral sequence, has to be in the final 12 slots. Based on the reaction yesterday, where people were describing it and couldn't stop laughing, I feel like it has to be there.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah.
It has to be there. It has to be there.
I'm okay with that, but I would also say, I think we didn't talk about it a lot before it went up here. I feel like that A Quiet Place Day One blues bar scene is an absolute must. I made my case for this on a different podcast, but I think A Quiet Place Day One is an example of franchise filmmaking done absolutely right. You know, a prequel to two successful movies that could have just been some throwaway cash grab, and it was instead this beautiful musing on the nature of life and death. And this scene in and amongst this horrible chaos is so touching and sweet and wonderful, and not the kind of thing you would expect to be in this movie. This is like one of my like that cinema baby moments this year. And I don't think I'm alone in that, but I feel like this must be there.
I agree, because A Quiet Place prequel is not where you expect to see a movie about taking your final moments to be kind to someone. A movie about kindness that's also a prequel to the Alien Invasion science fiction horror series. I was pretty bowled over by this film, and I genuinely feel the blues bar scene is indicative of this film's whole message, which is even when things are at the very end, you know, take care of each other. And that's a message I think we need more than ever, and this should be in the top 50.
Yay.
I like it.
Okay, cool.
All right. Goodness gracious. All right. Godzilla X Kong. Kong uses a baby Kong as a weapon. Should be in the top 50. Sorry.
I think that was the next one. I'm glad you said it and I didn't have to, because I feel like, as silly as it is, it really was like, you know, okay, for as serious as that A Quiet Place scene was, this is the other end of like, this is just fun, stupid shit. And I love that Adam Wingard got $200 million to do it. And it really is a shocking moment. And I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts about it, but
I'm going to push back a little bit here, because I feel like this is kind of like those, like that meme moment that Ryan, I feel like, pushed back a little bit on some other discussions. I feel like it just doesn't justify it enough. Maybe I'm the grump. I didn't love this movie. I didn't think it went nearly as far as a lot of fans said it did. I don't know. I'm looking at, we have what, 10 slots left? I don't know if this should make our list. I don't know. I'm sorry, guys.
10 slots left and 20 films remaining in the list. So, Jeremy, what of these do you think should either be straight up cut, or would you put into the top or the final 10?
I'm going to go hard for Anora making it. Let's make that I mean, I know yes. we already represented that on the list, but I do think the living room scene needs to be on this list.
Yes.
I'm really hesitant about the two movies at this point because we only have 10 slots. Like, that one's already got one on here. I don't know.
I don't care. It should be on there.
I feel like it's so good.
There are many options on In Discussion that would lead to a double up. Like, there are a bunch.
Yeah.
What if we put in a Nora's living room scene and a Baby Kong weapon?
If that's what it takes, I guess. But I don't know. I feel like the discrepancy between those two scenes. Anora, 100%. If that's what it takes, sure, so be it. But
the only thing I'll say is if we put those two scenes on the list at the same time, it is very representative of what a uniquely dichotomous year at the movies it was.
I am pro this plan.
I guess I won't be mad at Kong swinging a baby Kong around as a weapon, making it onto the list as a way to get a second Anora moment on here. So yeah, let's do it.
All right, cool. Nina, what's standing out to you on this list, either as a cut or a keep?
What do you think I'm going to say?
You can go to bat for popular.
I still really want popular to go on there, but what if I did something crazy and I pulled an about face and I said Twisters has to be on the list?
Yes, I agree. Glenn Powell's shirt gets very wet, should be on this list.
What if I changed my mind over the past 2 days?
I everyone knows what I think.
I think Twisters goes on the list.
When I saw this, I saw it with my wife and my sister-in-law. And you could feel every woman in the theater taking a breath during this moment. And I
certainly did. Yeah. Put it on the list. I was wrong and I'm big enough to admit it.
We already cut the milk scene from Baby Girl. We needed at least one, not a dry seat in the house moment.
Is anybody opposed to Glenn Powell's wet t-shirt making this list?
Nah, let's do it.
Yeah, I am maybe the straightest man on this podcast, and my shirt was not dry, or and my seat was not dry when that scene was on.
Your shirt was wet too, Jesus, Ryan. What were you doing?
He lactates.
I think we should cut The Substance's big performance. We have The Substance on the list, and I think Nina and BJ made a really good point about how the quieter, more realistic moment we made the list is probably the more powerful one. Now I just want to get some numbers cut down here.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that should go.
All right. Okay, what if we put Optimus Prime says trans rights on the list and cut Megalopolis' boner scene?
What a sentence.
Cinema.
If that's the only way to cut Megalopolis, then I guess so.
Yeah, why don't we cut Megalopolis? I'm over it. We talked about it. It's done.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Let it go.
All right. Ben, what do you think here? Like, of these remaining 15, we have 7 slots left. What stands out to you either direction?
It's kind of like a matter of, like, do we want to highlight smaller movies? Because something like It's What's Inside, the couple dying, or, like, the Red Rooms moment of the schoolgirl in the courtroom, like, putting those on a list like this, I think, represents the idea of, like, hey, we're standing up for these movies that maybe didn't get the full attention that they deserved. And we, you know, we're putting our stamp of approval on them by including them on our list. Because a lot of the other movies that we have here are, like, pretty big compared to those. So it just kind of comes down to, like, what do we think the list is going to represent or mean or whatever in the, you know, as we get down to the final few here.
Speak your heart, Ben. Pick one that you think speaks to you and we'll see what happens.
Well, I think we should cut Ricky Stenicki, the Rock Hard Rod show. Like, I'm sorry, John Cena, that moment is pretty funny, but, like, given what else we have to go through here, I just don't know if it's going to make it. And I think maybe we keep, God, the courtroom schoolgirl scene in Red Rooms is so deeply disturbing and, like, just unhinged. And it's a movie that you can't ever really predict what's going to happen. And that was, like, a genuinely shocking moment to me when I saw that. I was like, oh, my God, the the headspace that somebody would have to be in to dress up as this, these parents' dead child, and walk into the very courtroom where this case is being tried and like stare at them dead in the eyes is like, you know, some sort of psychosexual weird shit going on that I've never seen before. And I kind of think that should go on the list. What do you think?
I think cutting Ricky's thinking and putting Redmond on the list is a good choice.
Now, here's the thing I want to point out, though, because I misrepresented this clip a little bit yesterday. John Cena is not lip syncing. He's singing. And I forgot, I don't know how I forgot this, but all of the lyrics of the songs are made to be about masturbation. Like a dirty Weird Al Yankovic, to the point where he's saying, instead of "school's out for summer," he's saying "splooge out my penis," and
I think you just sealed you put the final nail in the coffin right there with that one, Brad.
You're right. It did get it onto the list, I think. And there's a lot more than that too, because like he does "whip it to grip it," where he's talking about grabbing his dick. The more I watched the clip, the more I thought, you know what, we made a mistake and I shouldn't have tried to let it go so swiftly. And I don't know, but I don't think we have a lot of dick representation on this list other than one getting chopped off. So, no, I'm mostly kidding. I'm fine if it ends up getting cut, but even if you don't watch Ricky Stenicki, which whatever, it's like, it's fine. Just go to YouTube and look up Rock Hard Rod's show and just watch the clip of John Cena doing all these songs, because it is a riot.
So it sounds to me like we can put Red Rooms on the list and cut Ricky Stinky.
Yeah,
that sounds perfect.
Jeremy, what are you thinking?
All right, I'm gonna say okay, this can be surprising as the resident Dune grump, but I would be totally okay if we put Dune Part 2, Paul's Holy War Begins, on our list. I know we only have, what, 5 more slots?
6
slots, and I know we've represented Dune already, I believe, earlier in the list. When Paul rides a sandworm. But if any movie's going to get 2 slots... I feel like Dune has a lot of momentum behind it. That scene in particular, like I said before, I think it is one of the biggest moments that feels fully representative of what actually happens in the book. It is translated 100% faithfully, 100% perfectly. I'd be okay with taking up one of our precious few slots with this one.
It's also a phenomenal acting moment, whereas like the sandworm is a great acting moment for on some level, but it's also a huge action set piece. This is like a close-up of Timmy Chalamet's face for basically the whole time.
I'm a Dune guy. I'm happy with Dune having 2 slots in this list.
I love it.
I will say this, even as maybe the bigger Dune grump, for as much as I have been grumpy about it, I respect deeply what Denny is doing with these movies and the idea that like actual like art is also like become blockbuster filmmaking at his hands. I respect that and we should honor that. And I would second this going.
All right. I think Dune's Holy War has made our list. Good. Dune and Aura doubling up. Ryan, please go ahead.
As I say, I'll be honest, I won't really fight any other fight the rest of the way here, other than to say maybe my last sort of like gasp here of as far as block, you know, the your popcorn style blockbuster, I think it's at risk of getting cut if I don't go for it. But I think that Bad Boys Ride or Die moment is like, you know, it sort of shows you, hey, that baton that Michael Bay, it could be passed elsewhere. And, you know, I don't know. And you can still do interesting things inside of this type of action movie. And I really do think that was super rad. And, you know, it's Will Smith doing Will Smith things. And I think, you know, in sort of arguing for my bread and butter as a movie lover, the popcorn style cinema, I would, of what's left, this is the one I kind of care about the most. But that's all I'm really going to say. But I don't know if I'm going to have support, but I'm not ready to just axe this, but I could see this being axed if I didn't stand up for it. So,
Yeah, to me, this is like the equivalent of Michael Bay using drone shots in Ambulance. Like, it's just, it's something new that we haven't seen before. Because, like, not even when they tried to do, like, first-person action stuff in Doom was it done anywhere near this well, you know, or in any other movie that tried it. Because what's so cool about it is how freely and, like, kinetically the camera is able to move attached to the gun. Because it spins from being pointed at bad guys that Will Smith is shooting at to turning back and looking at Will Smith and giving you character moments and going back and forth. It's just an incredibly well done sequence.
In the interest of balance, how about we, in the same way, like you attach a government rider into a bill. What if we add the Bad Boys Ride or Die gun sequence, but attach Love Lies Bleeding, Jackie Goes Kaiju to counterbalance it?
Yes. I fully approve of this. Yes.
I haven't seen Love Lies Bleeding, so I can't speak to it, but, you know.
It's a wild moment. I think, yeah, I like this plan, Jacob.
Yeah, that's a good plan.
All right. Bad news, though, is that we now only have 3 slots left and 10 movies remaining in a discussion.
Okay, I have one I want to push for.
Sorry.
Sure, what do you want to cut?
Let's cut both Fall Guy moments. I'm the biggest boost for that film, but at this point,
Ooh, what's so funny is that the one I was about to push for is the record-setting car flip, because we talk all the time on Slash Film, on the podcast, about how stunt performance does not get the flowers that it deserves. And this is a literal Guinness Book world record of a stunt performance. And I feel like that alone deserves it on the list. It is so fucking awesome to see and to know, like, who's going to honor them if not us?
I was prepared to fall on the sword, but now that I have support, yeah, record-setting car flip.
I would also rather see this. This is a slight tweak to Ben's earlier argument that, you know, what do we want this list to say? And The Fall Guy was one of those movies that, like, should have done better than it did. And I think this is sort of like a way to honor, like, hey, look, this was a really good movie within this realm of, like, franchise blockbuster style filmmaking. And, you know, that should be honored. And so I would back that as well.
Yeah, BJ, Jacob, you have my sword and my axe on this one.
There's a part of me that thinks it's a shame to lose the other one, even though it is so tight and it's tough to get, you know, 2 moments on this list for a single movie, because the other thing I love about The Fall Guy, aside from obviously how great the action is in it, is that it does the romantic comedy side so incredibly well right along with it. And the split screen phone call is perfect evidence of how well that works. And so it would be a bummer to lose that. But I do think that the record setting car flip is just, you know, above that in a different way.
All right. It sounds like it's on the list. Okay. We'll cut split screen phone call. 2 slots, 8 movies. I think we should cut the Furiosa tanker chase. Furiosa is on the list. We have a lot of good action on the list already. I think we can probably devote these last 2 slots to non-action.
I agree with that.
I don't think the Marvel Outcast return to put Wolverine is top 50. It's really, really fun. I enjoyed it. But the better scenes on the list, I think we can cut it.
Yeah, I agree.
Agreed.
Cut it.
I love Strange Darling. But if we're going to include another horror scene in the top and final 2, I'm not saying we need to, of the 2 horror sequences left in discussion, The Last Shot of Immaculate is better than Strange Darling's Chapter 2.
I would agree with that.
Yep.
All right, so now down to 5 movies to discuss. Statue of Liberty opening moment in The Brutalist is genuinely incredible. But I'm prepared to argue for Transformers 1 getting on this list before a second Brutalist scene.
I love this for you.
The only reason I'm okay with letting go of the Statue of Liberty scene is because the Brutalist is already represented. And I didn't watch Transformers 1, but I am going to now. So, yeah, I'd be okay with this.
Any objections?
No, it's fine. Let it go.
Okay, so that leaves it. Of these, let's do, okay, 4 slots. Sorry, 4 movies remaining. 2 slots. It's What's Inside, The Couple Dies. Popular from Wicked. Optimus Prime saying trans rights, and The Last Shot of Immaculate. Can everybody go into the dock and put an asterisk next to the one that you would personally pick for the pick one that you would pick for the final slots?
Oh, man. Oh, God.
Gee, I wonder who... Oh, never mind. Oh, this isn't going how I thought it was going to go.
All right. Immaculate. The last shot of Immaculate got the fewest support. I say we just cut it and focus on these top, on these other three and see where it goes.
All righty, let's go.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, but the last shot of Immaculate is fantastic, though. Okay. So we erase the asterisks. What if we put It's What's Inside and Transformers 1 into the top 50? We already have Wicked on the list. Sorry, Ariane. but this way we keep our doubled up to just Dune and just Sonora. We get two more movies on the list, more variety, and we acknowledge that Wicked's popular sequence is number 51 on the list.
It makes sense and hurts my heart at the same time. I guess that's how this goes.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan, Jacob.
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right, me. Add these to the list. Wicked's popular sequence is number 51. That's the deal. All right. We have our top 50. We need to read this out for the audience. I'll read the first 10. They'll hand off to somebody else, read the next 10, and so on. These are not ranked, but our 50 best moments of 2024 in cinema. Will and Harper. Will breaks down in the car. Dune Part 2. Paul rides a sandworm. Madam Webb defeated by the Pepsi pee. Abigail, Samuels are fucking onions. Hitman, the notes app scene. Alien Romulus, the offspring reveal. Trap, Josh Hartnett escapes the concert by revealing the truth. Saturday Night, Andy Kaufman saves Saturday Night and everyone helps with the bricks. Furiosa, slowly chasing Chris Hemsworth through the desert. A complete unknown, Bob Dylan goes electric. BJ, can you do the next 10?
I sure can. Number 11, Lisa Frankenstein, the dick chop. Number 12, The Substance, Elizabeth gets ready for her date. Number 13, Oddity, The Tent Scare. 14, In a Violent Nature, The Cliffside Kill, you know the one, aka The Yoga Kill. 15, The Wild Robot, Rescuing the Animals. 16, His Three Daughters, The Father's Monologue at the End. 17, Anora, The Ending. 18, Sonic 3, The Live and Learn Needle Drop Fight. 19, Woman of the Hour, The Parking Lot Scene, and 20, Land of Bad, The Raid on the Compound.
Ryan, give me the next 10.
Indeed. At number 21, we have Better Man, The Concert Fantasy Battle Sequence. At number 22, we have Deadpool and Wolverine, The Van Fight. 23, The Beekeeper, Jason Statham Blows Up the Call Center. 24, Nosferatu, Count Orlok Meets Nicholas Holt. Number 25, Y2K, Fred Durst Puts on the Hat. Number 26, Challengers, The Ending, aka The Final Match. Number 27, Conclave, The Truth About the New Pope. Number 28, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, The Ending. Number 29, Civil War, Jesse Plemons Scene. And number 30, The Brutalist, The Presentation in 1980, and The Cut to the Credits.
Brad, 31 to 40, please.
31, Long Legs. Daddy! Mommy! 32, Nickel Boys, the entire ending sequence. 33, Wicked, Defying Gravity. 34, Heretic, the Monopoly Monologue. 35, The First Omen, the Demon Hand Vagina Shot. 36, Hundreds of Beavers, the Assembly Line Sequence. 37, Inside Out 2, the Anxiety Attack. 38, I Saw the TV Glow, the Planetarium Monologue. 39, Unfrosted, the Funeral. And 40, A Quiet Place Day One, the Blues Bar Scene.
And Nina, take us home with the last 10.
All right. 41, Anora, the entire living room scene. 42, Godzilla versus Kong. Kong uses a baby Kong as a weapon. 43, Twisters. Glenn Powell's shirt gets very wet. 44, Red Room's courtroom schoolgirl / braces scene. 45, Dune Part 2, Paul's Holy War Begins. 46, Bad Boys Ride or Die, that cool gunpoint camera sequence. 47, Love Lies Bleeding, Jackie Goes Kaiju. Number 48, The Fall Guy, the record-setting car flip. 49, It's What's Inside, the couple dies. And finally, number 50, Transformers 1, Optimus Prime pretty much says trans rights.
That's a good list, folks. I'm happy with this list.
Good job, guys. Well, very tonight. Quintessential slash.
Yeah, this is good.
Well, that's, once again, we'll...
Oh, I forgot. Number 51, popular from Wicked.
We'll reconvene in 1 year's time to hash it out again. Ben, do you want to take us out?
Yep. All right. So you can find more about all the movies that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening. We actually have a jam-packed week of episodes for you guys next week. We have a lot of interviews and stuff coming up, so stay tuned for that. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.